from sunny St. Leonard's on the south coast of the UK. This is the Keto Woman Podcast, brought to you by me, Daisy Brackenhall. Hello, keto lovelies, and welcome to episode number 203, which is the second part of my conversation with Janine Davenport. If you listened last week, you will know that she primarily identifies as a dog advocate. She is all about doing the best she possibly can for dogs. But this week we get to talk a little bit more about her and her battle with sugar addiction. And she will mention a couple of resources in the episode, and I've made sure to put links to those in the show notes, together with information about her dog rescue called Five Circles Dog Rescue. Again, all the links you will find in the show notes. I'm running late again with this edit. I have not had the best of weeks. I've woken up with a really bad headache every day for over a week now. And it's just been frustrating, wasting time trying to get rid of them. So every day I seem to be running later and later. And I'm also currently being circled by the dogs because it's dinner time. And I've just had a wonderful time chatting to Molly, who you'll hear from next week. I've been recording an episode with her. But they're all starting to give me those looks now. It's past dinner time. What do you think you're doing, housekeeper? You have your duties to attend to. But I'm determined to get this introduction done so that I can edit it as soon as, of course, I've prepared their dinner. And that's Bets down to my left. And it reminds me, I wanted to make a note here in the introduction that she appears in this episode gently snoring in the background throughout a lot of it. So if you're wondering what that strange rumbling sound is in the background, it's Bets. How I've got things set up at the moment is I've got pretty well everything really in the living room because of this building work that is still not happening. But the bed's in here, the sofa's in here. I've got a table set up with my laptop in front of me where I tend to record. And there's a spot next to me on the sofa, which has a cushion and the dog blanket over it. And it's one of the favorite spots for all of them, but particularly Bets. It has the added bonus of being next to me as well. But of course, the problem is when she falls fast asleep and starts snoring, it gets picked up by the mic. But overall, I think most people find it endearing. So hopefully that's you. It hasn't been an overly eventful week. We have had a bit of that heat wave that was promised. I think I mentioned last week that I wouldn't be holding my breath. But I was wrong, and we have had some very, very warm days, and I've spent a lovely couple of evenings down at the beach. By the time I've actually got through the things I wanted to do in the day, the only time I've been able to go is just before the sun goes down and get a quick swim in. But it's turned out to be a fantastic time to go down, and everyone, it seems, has been out and about trying to just take advantage of these last warm days we have before we properly head into autumn and winter. So the beach has been a really special place. It's been low tide, so you get those lovely big expanses of sand that are fantastic for kids to play on. And there've been families down there and people with dogs and people having barbecues. And yes, really nice feeling and very warm Mediterranean temperatures. You know, when you get that lovely warm breeze, it's felt very reminiscent actually of France and the kind of temperatures of there. And then walking back and seeing all the lights as they light up in the evening. Really, really nice. So I have enjoyed that. I might have started off complaining about having headaches all week, but there have been some really good points too. Rocket is doing well. He just gets a little bit better all the time. He's really enjoying his walks again and almost seems to be at that point where he's just coming out of himself a little bit more again. We have these periods every now and then where he sort of seems to make a bit of a leap forward whatever it may be, whether it was, you know, building his relationship with me when we came here, getting more confident with people and traffic and other dogs. Well, he seems to have recently decided to get a bit more adventurous when it comes to interacting with other dogs. And I've noticed that he's just gotten a little bit more playful. As usual, he watches Amy, and every time Amy's running around and having a good time with other dogs, I can see him watching and seeing that it looks like something that might be fun, something that he might enjoy. But he sort of has this way about him that he constantly has to learn how to be a dog, be a sort of a pet dog. It's all sort of kind of so foreign to him, I guess, because of his background, just being a street dog and being on his own. I don't know. I'm making all sorts of assumptions and creating stories in my head, but it's fascinating watching him, watching what he might be thinking. And like I say, making these little leaps forward. And it's lovely to see, especially when it means things like him having fun and enjoying himself. He watches Amy playing with the ball as well. She loves it. She really enjoys and has her way of telling me what she wants to do. So she'll bring it back to me when she wants me to carry on playing and throwing it for her. But when she's had enough, and maybe she's got a bit too hot, or she's just worn out and she doesn't want to do it anymore, she just won't bring it back. She'll go and sit with it somewhere else. And I feel like that's her way of telling me that, you know, she doesn't want to play anymore, because she's perfectly capable of bringing it back when she wants to, when she actually wants me to throw it again. But again, I watch him watching this game we have between us, but he really doesn't get it. He'll occasionally, he'll go up to the ball and he'll sort of push it with his foot. But if I throw it for him, he's like, well, what do you expect me to do with that? I'm really not interested. But he kind of is interested. It's this funny dynamic, and it's a joy to watch. And I think there's probably so much more on this developmental journey to come with him. And I can't wait to see what it is. But mostly this whole issue he has with anxiety and with flies is getting a lot better. And he's getting back more to that point where he gets cross with them again and he snaps at them. But it's great that they're not impacting his walks anymore, because that was something that was such a point of enjoyment for him, that he really looked forward to his walk. So it's fantastic that he's gotten back to that, and he's really keen and is back to nagging me again in the mornings. They both do, him and Amy, nag me when it's time to go for a walk. So that's fantastic. And at home, he's mostly spending time again back to normal, changing where he likes to sleep. He occasionally ducks back under the bed, but he's spending much more time back out in the open with us. So he's not absolutely back to normal yet, but pretty well there. And of course, it's thanks to Janine and her advice that we've got to this point. So it's really good, actually, to be able to report to you how well he's doing in this second part of her episode, because it's a really good illustration of how impactful the advice she gives is, especially on overly sensitive dogs like him. Nothing much has happened on the building front, as per usual, but I have been given a recommendation for somebody who might come and help with the floors. He's coming to see me next week, so fingers crossed. He certainly sounded like a nice chap when I spoke to him on the phone, and he seemed keen to help, and maybe not too far off in the distance scheduling wise. So keep everything crossed. And hopefully I'll be able to report some good news to you this time next week. But enough of my ramblings. I am sure you want to get started with this week's episode and to hear the rest of Janine's story. So I won't hold you up any longer. Enjoy the rest of my conversation with Janine Davenport. So where in your journey did keto or sugar addiction come in? You know, is this something that you've always struggled with? When, you know, when did it come into your peripheral vision and you started thinking, okay, oh, hey, you know, I've got to do something about this?
Oh, this is a difficult one. I've got the same story as many, in that from a child, I was a sugar addict. I would steal money and steal sugar as a four-year-old. And I remember it very, very well. And I'm saddened by it, you know, but a lot of people have this tale. And as I grew up, I used to steal sweets from my sister. And I was compelled. It didn't even seem wrong.
Mm.
You know? So, and then as I got older, I had access to my own money and I ate the things that I shouldn't constantly. So I didn't realise it was wrong. Nobody told me it was wrong. Before I knew it, I was in a situation where I was binging on sugar on a regular basis. It kind of, I realised there was something not quite right. But I didn't know what to do about it. There was no help. There was nothing. So I sort of rolled around between diet strategies for years as I put weight on, between Weight Watchers and Slimming World, and nothing ever worked because, of course, I wasn't addressing the addiction.
Mm.
And then I found Atkins. This is 20 years ago. And for the first time, I managed to drop 3 stone. But I realized how good it was, but everyone around me told me it was really bad for me. And of course, 2 years later, I put all the weight back plus another stone. Then 2 years ago, I'm still on and off low carb. I've been on and off low carb all my life, realizing the science makes perfect sense, but unable to get the right support to continue. So I met Heather a couple of years ago, went to a meeting, realized I've got local support, which helped me so much. Then I got introduced to Sugar Bomb and David Wolf. The first session, I sat and cried because I was with people like me and realized it was okay to be a sugar addict. I'd been hiding it all my life. And it was okay. I was sugar addicted and I just had to accept that. The more I accepted, the more I could say it, the more I came out of denial, the less issues I had with the process of removing it. So I transitioned back onto low carb in a different way that I've ever done it before. I removed carbs slowly and raised protein slowly. I didn't count my macros. I just did my own transition. And then eventually everything started to fall into place. I started to eat the foods that I should be eating on low carb and left the rest behind. But it took a year to make that transition. And I also started testing as well, doing my own blood tests. I was in metabolic syndrome. I was hypertensive and on beta blockers. I was on statins and I'd got a cardiac issue as well. So it made perfect sense to me to get this on board and run with it. I was also vegetarian and I stopped being vegetarian. That helped tremendously. And I got the help with Heather and David Wolf and I stepped off the Titanic. I was determined I wasn't going to sink this time. That was it. I was going to do it and I did. And I will never go back. I can honestly say that now. I've never been able to say that before. I know I'm vulnerable because all addicts are, but I'm vulnerable to myself. And that's something I never understood before. And I do now with the likes of David and the others that I've met in the low carb community, learning about red dog, blue dog, and all the tools to help me get there. That's how I do it now. And I've slipped up a few times, but instead of beating myself up and making a big thing about it, I just go to, so what? You know, if I can handle it, then okay. But generally speaking, I'm sort of 50 gram of carbs or less every day. And I love it. I love the way of living. I've never felt so good. My brain's more active. I came off beta blockers within 3 weeks of starting full on low carb. And the statins have taken a bit longer. So it's about 8 months for statins, but I'm off statins too.
Great.
I've lost 2 stone. So that's basically what happened. I sat in on a David Wolf session and I cried for about 3 days and it was moving.
What's the Red Dog, Blue Dog? I'm not familiar with Red Dog, Blue Dog. Tell me about Red Dog, Blue Dog.
Okay. So the Red Dog is the addiction and you can't have Red Dog without Blue Dog. Okay. But the Red Dog, once you kind of got coping with your addiction and things are, let's say, more even in your mind, your Red Dog, you tend to leave outside the door. He's still there waiting to come in. Mm-hmm. And you pay him respect. You never ignore the fact that the addiction, your Red Dog, is there. It's always there. But the Blue Dog is the working with the addiction and coming through it and the curing and the healing. So the more persistent, if the Blue Dog is there more persistently, then you're healing quicker and quicker and faster. And the Red Dog is, it remains out there all the time, you know, and he does get smaller. Strange things happen in your mind when given these, because my Red Dog was massive. He filled my porch and now he's about 2 inches high. In the porch, it's still there. I still speak to him when I walk through the porch. I always pay him respect, always. It was part of my healing process to understand that I can put my addiction one side, but I can't get rid of it. And that's how transfer of addictions occurs, because I was a smoker as well for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And when I stopped smoking, I ate more sugar. So you just swap one for another.
That's right.
And that's what I'd been doing mm-hmm. all my life. So knowing that my addiction is outside the door, I have control over it. So that's my Red Dog. But the Red Dog throws his nose in occasionally when you're not expecting him to.
No, that's very interesting what you say. And to be mindful and respectful and aware that it's always there, because, yes, however well managed and small he is today, has that potential to get huge again overnight. It's amazing how quickly it can happen.
I
like that. It's a very good, I work very well with visual imagery, so it's very useful, I think, to have something like that.
Yeah,
it really helps you manage it.
Yeah, I don't think I could have done it without, to be honest. It's part of how I got there. And every so often you feel the Red Dog breathe down your neck. You know, I was out with a friend and she had a cake with cream and the Red Dog was breathing at the back of my neck. And I immediately sent him away, you know, and it was fine. So it's, yes, it's still there. 9 times out of 10 I can do that without even feeling the Red Dog, but I have to be careful still. And now it's a health thing. I mean, I guess when I got to the point where I was in metabolic syndrome, that was the point where I realized if I didn't do something about it, I would die, particularly with cardiac issues as well. You know, it was going to kill me. And also sugar edits your life. You know, without a doubt, I would stop doing things so I could eat sugar. Same as any addict, I suppose. Mm. Yeah.
It's incredible how much it can impact your life, the extremes that you will go to satisfy those cravings.
Oh, yeah. I would think nothing of driving, getting up at 4 in the morning and driving for 2 litres of ice cream and lots of chocolate. And I'd eat the lot and I wouldn't be sick or anything. I would just eat it, you know. And, yes, of course, there's an emotional component to that. There's lots of different components to that, which I now understand. And I also understand that we're all individual and we all need different treatment to get ourselves through it. And I also now realize how we trade our addictions all our life, because we were born addicted. You know, that whole realization of knowing that it's an illness and not a failing is a huge thing, because all my life I thought I'd failed. I thought I was bad. I thought it was wrong and I was bad. But actually, it's a health problem. Mm. It's not a failing. It's a disease.
Mm. And these are natural tendencies. I see so much overlap, actually, with dog behavior. You know, when you realize that so many of these traits, behaviors, habits that you think of as being bad or undesirable in some way, once you accept that they're natural, that they're things that we're used to doing, they're things, if you're talking about dogs, it's just natural behavior. And you start working with that, become accepting of that, becoming mindful of that, and finding ways to work with it and around it, rather than just trying to fight against it, push these behaviors out of the way. It becomes a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, denial's a terrible thing. Yeah. You're not helping anyone.
And the same with punitive measures.
Absolutely.
You know, so many of these things, you see, we can apply the emotional bucket. We can apply the problems with punitive punishment. We're just dogs, really.
Absolutely.
We work
all
in the same way. But there is, isn't there? There's a lot of overlap.
Yes, there is a lot of overlap. Whenever you're working with emotions, I think emotions are the same in any species. You're dealing with fear, love, hate, and various other emotions, jealousy. Virtually every species will have some sort of those types of emotions. Not the same, but akin to. So, yeah, the results are going to be the same, aren't they?
Mm. And we have so much, there's so much instinctive behavior that is behind these things that we see as bad habits. You know, this intense craving and drive to stock up on sugary foods.
Mm.
Well, that has roots in something that's actually very sensible and was something that was of paramount importance to our survival. You know, there's a reason we have this instinct to seek out those kinds of foods, especially at a certain time of year, to see us through the winter, because otherwise we might not get through that winter. You know, there's right down at its core, there's real common sense and survival instinct behind these drives that we have. They've just gone awry. But I think once you accept that that is the case, that there's a reason for that, it's just gone haywire, that it's not your fault. I guess that's what I'm driving at.
Yeah.
The first thing, I think particularly women, but everyone to a certain extent, I'm sure, the first response is, well, it's got to be my fault. It's something wrong with me. I'm broken. It's my problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that just makes it worse, of course.
Of course it does. You really are on that wheel, aren't you? Yeah.
Mm.
You go down the tunnel, down the rabbit hole.
Absolutely.
And it's very unpleasant. I have to say, now I feel like I've had a complete release from that lie. But I'm 64. And I've got to 64 before I understood what my addiction was about. And I feel I've wasted too many years. And I feel very sad about that. I hope nobody wastes as much time as I do. That's all I can say.
It's difficult, isn't it? I think that's a dangerous track of thought to have, really. It's certainly one that I've been down. But I think there's also something about having to get to a certain point in your life before you're willing to truly listen to the things that you need to hear. It's so very easy to say, I wish I'd known all this when I was 25. But if somebody had told you all that when you were 25, would you have acted on it? I don't know. You know, sometimes you just it just has to be right place, right time, right person telling you. Like you said, you saw the benefit of Atkins when you did it 20 years ago, and you've been on and off with that, but you didn't have the right supportive environment to really make it stick until more recently.
Yeah.
So it's not like you kind of didn't know the things, you didn't have the tools, because you had them there, but they, not all the pieces of the jigsaw were there available to you.
Yeah, that's very true.
At the right time. So yeah. I think it's so very easy, and it's a train of thought that I go down often. So I'm a big old hypocrite in saying it's not useful, but you know what I mean.
It's not useful. but I can't help the fact that I think it.
Absolutely.
You know, I wished I'd have found this way of life much sooner. It's a way of life I can live easily. I don't think about it. In fact, I did have a few days off eating carbs and I couldn't wait to get back into my carb-free zone because I haven't felt so poorly in ages. Mm. I lost the clarity in my head. I felt really, really bloated and I felt awful. And if anything, it only actually let me see how bad that lifestyle was. So it was a good thing I did it in a lot of ways because I won't be wanting to go there again, you know.
Yes, and I've said that before, actually. As much as I would never advise anybody to do that, when it does happen, yeah, learn something from it because there's definitely value in that.
Yeah, definitely. For most people, maybe not for all, but for most, yeah. Yeah, I was a bit scared because, of course, my red dog grew a bit larger. So I was careful about how big he did get to grow. 2 days was enough. So, yeah, it was interesting. But my way of life now is I can't wait for the low-carb stuff. I love it.
Mm.
And I went to a barbecue 2 days ago where everything was low-carb and it was fantastic. Absolutely amazing.
Yes, it's not as difficult. I think some people focus on the restriction side of it. And of course, there is a restrictive element to it. But one of the things that I really like about it is that there are so many of the things that I love. Yes, there is some restriction there, but there's more on the side of all these delicious things that I've not necessarily, because I've never been very good at restriction when it comes to fatty things. I've always liked the fatty things and I've always felt guilty about that. And I've always felt guilty about not liking fruit, for example. A bit strange in that regard that I've never liked it, you know, apart from when I was very, very young child. I think I might have eaten some things, but I've always been a bit weird about that. Always felt a bit guilty from a health point of view. And now it's like there's this diet that says no, actually it's a good thing that you don't eat fruit, and it is a it's a good thing that you like the fatty cuts, so you know.
I don't see that I'm missing out on anything at all. The stuff I'm missing out on actually gave me heart disease and gave me hypertension and created a very unstable situation in my body. Mm. And that's how I see it. And I can't really see it as there's nothing in those foods there that I could now go back to, knowing what it did to me. So that's my, I suppose, that's how I am now. That's how I think. And I can't ever think any differently because that is fact. You know, the evidence is there. And I believe in evidence, so I just can't go back now.
Yes, I was going to say that's something that you're very driven with from the dog behavior point of view. But yes, so I can see how that would very easily apply to diet and lifestyle. It's very important to you to see the evidence, the scientific evidence behind it.
It is indeed. And my continual blood testing and tracking of HbA1c plus my cholesterols is all the evidence I need to know I'm still on the right track. So that's all I need. I don't need anything else.
Mm.
It's only saying what we know. I know how unhealthy I was before.
Yes, it's a good way of proving, isn't it? You know, you've got all the other things that you feel better physically, you look better physically, you feel better mentally. You were talking about, you know, mental clarity and energy levels and all those things. But to have the blood test as well is just, it's a really good package, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here, proof of how healthy I am and how well this is all working.
Yeah. But to get a GP on side is virtually impossible where I am.
Right.
So I have to do it myself.
But yeah, so showing them blood tests is a good way of speaking their language, isn't it?
Absolutely. Here, this is where I am.
Mm.
I'm not taking statins. I took myself off them because the response I got was, no, you can't do that.
Oh, yes, I can.
I just did. Yeah. And my trig ratio is 0.43. So I'm healthier now than I've ever been. And without statins and eating lots of fat.
And of course, this all feeds into, or I presume anyway, making you healthier, giving you more energy and mental clarity to do the work that you want to be doing.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you might be taking a different direction. What are your thoughts? What are the plans? What's next?
Well, the main one is the new rescue, Five Circles Dog Rescue. And that's going to involve lots of projects, I hope. So I would like to start running an education program. So I really would like to look at that.
That's a good idea.
But instead of just one area, make it wider and broader and see how we can instigate that. I've already talking to another lady in Ibiza about this. I know this is going to take time to roll out. I know it's not going to be easy to get together. But, you know, if it takes 2 to 5 years, it takes that and we get moving with it. So education. I would also like to set up a neutering program as well. Some areas have got lots and lots of unneutered dogs. And if we can't get them into rescue, and if they are going to be feral but reasonably safe, when I say safe, that they're in areas where nobody bothers, then we should be neutering them. So that's another area that I want to look at. I don't know whether that will be possible because it means trapping a lot of dogs and watching them. But we will see. All these are ideas at the moment, and I want to transfer them into something more concrete. Some of the ideas will work and some won't. I don't know which will.
And what did you have in mind with when you mentioned education? Is that education locally in Spain, or, you know, potentially working with people like me in general, dog owners? I mean, I know you work one-to-one with people like me, the woman I mentioned earlier with the whippet, with the ball obsession. I know you've been speaking to another couple I know from dog walking who have a pointer, it has lots of health issues. What were you thinking on the education front? Because I can see great benefits in maybe, you know, having some basic principles for just in general for dog owners to improve the well-being of their dogs.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I need to throw it around with a few people, really. I think there's a need for both. There's a need for rescue dog owners to have a manual, if you like,
yes,
of various things that can go wrong, when you need help, and other things that can happen, what you're likely to meet. And I also think that there's a need for education in Spain, which is greater. That is the greatest need, where people need to understand more about dogs there. There's also another need, really, that people on the ground, because you can educate and you can read books, and you can do 99% of it that way. But it would be really great to get some cascade rescue dog training working where people have hands-on and can be like a rescue advocate and pop into someone and help them, you know, and maybe build a rescue advocate community on that basis. These are all ideas I've had for some time, and it takes me a while to get things moving. Of course, lockdown stopped a lot anyway, but I've got so much going on in my head. I have new ideas every day and I have to shove them all out and keep the good ones in, you know. So, but the community is something I would like to do as well.
But as you said before, there have been some benefits to lockdown and getting you to think in different ways.
Yeah.
Think in different ways, but thinking about communication and network in different ways.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's so easy now to connect with people. I mean, look how we're connecting now. Local groups are great for all sorts of things, and that face-to-face connection is also great for things. But having that network that is limitless, really, as long as you've got the access to the technology, the sky's the limit, really.
It is. And that, of course, has opened up the community program a lot because we can make that international, which is great. But getting the dog rescue running, I've also got other projects on the go at the moment. So everything is got to take its time before it gets there. But I want to work on all of these, but I think the priority program will be dogs in Spain. because they need it most. So that will start first. I'll gradually put together and maybe ask quite a few other people their ideas on starting a community for rescue folk like us, where they can get access to lots and lots of different aspects of dog care and behaviour and what to do when things go wrong.
Yes, which they're bound to.
Yeah.
You know, especially, I mean, to be honest, with any dog, but especially, I guess, with rescue dogs, just because of the baggage they're bringing with them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're not all super chilled like Bets. I mean, I can't really classify Bets as a rescue dog because she came from a very loving home. So she came very well adjusted. But most rescue dogs that you're rehoming, they're coming with baggage that you just...
Yeah.
Like we said before, and before we started recording, how wonderful it would be if you could have a conversation with them and for them to be able to explain and for you to be able to explain. You're just missing that element, that unknown element, where if you haven't had them from a puppy, not to say that you can't screw puppies up. I've certainly seen that happen, done it myself, played my own part with my first dog. But, you know, there's just that unknown where you just don't know what they've experienced, so it's really difficult to deal with.
They're not actually pet dogs. None of these dogs are pet dogs. We turn them into pet dogs, and that's going to take most of that process. It's going to take most of a year to achieve that process. Certainly for the hunting breeds, it's going to be a year, and it could be longer. It could be up to 2 years. That is something that people have to realise. You're not getting a ready-made pet dog, you know.
No, it does take time.
Yeah.
It really takes time. And you're absolutely right. It depends on the dog.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that look. It's the stages of the looks they give you when they first arrive, where it's just like, you know, terror and I don't want anything to do with you. And how quickly it goes from that to all of a sudden, one day you see them looking at you with love and adoration.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've made it. And the difference in time, that took, I mean, that took well over a year with Rocket, well over a year.
Yeah.
Before he suddenly started looking at me that way. Amy, it was much quicker.
Yeah.
Bets, even quicker than that. But the flip side to that patience, is the reward factor, I think, is off the charts.
I'd agree with you.
The reward that you feel when they finally start looking at you that way. Yeah, there's nothing quite like that, is there?
There is no other feeling like it. That's the difference very often with the UK rescues as well. It's a very different process with a foreign rescue. Very different. And you get a different feeling at the end of it. The whole thing is different. And a lot of people they underestimate the power, how that happens, when it happens, and the emotions that you will feel. Most people underestimate that. It's huge.
I certainly did. It is. It's really wonderful. And I think the more needy they are, the more difficult, quote unquote, they are. I mean, you know, I've told the story before. The rescue place with Rocket tried their best to persuade me not to have him, but I stubbornly persisted, and I'm very glad that I did.
It was meant to be.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, we've rambled all over the place, but I think we've covered most things. And you mentioned your rescue there, but perhaps give us, I will put links in the show notes for people who want to go and find it, but just give us a few more details of where we can find out more.
Okay, well, it's Five Circles Dog Rescue, and there are four trustees. Myself, Victoria, who is Spanish, Kim, who lives in London, and Norma, who lives southwest, I think. And it's an online rescue, but we do have, we use residences in Spain. So we rescue the dogs from the pounds, we put them into residences, and sometimes they come to me in the UK. So I'm the main fosterer for the rescue. And we provide 100% backup for the dogs. So when they arrive in the UK, having been through all the legal channels to get here, Then sometimes they'll come to me for assessment, but if we're pretty sure of the assessment that we have, then they can go straight to their homes. We're all very experienced in rescue, having worked with different rescues for around 10 to 15 years, but it's been my dream to start my own rescue. And now, of course, we're only 6 weeks old. We're very new. Our website launched.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Gosh, I didn't realise. I thought you'd been going for a while, right?
No, I've been working for other rescues during that time.
I see.
Yeah, I'm still working for other rescues, but our website launches today.
Oh, fantastic.
So we've just got that running. It's taken a long, long time to get things going. We've applied for charitable status. That's all going through at the moment, but it takes ages. So we're currently bringing, I think we've got 5 dogs to bring to the UK in the next 2 weeks, all got homes. And these are our first few adopters and adoptions. So we're all really excited. And these are dogs that had no hope and no chance. And nobody wanted them. And they ended up in probably the most horrific pound in Spain. So nobody wants them. It's even hard to get them out of there. So we know those dogs are going to have the best lives. So it's a very young, new rescue, but with a lot of experience behind us. And we've got Kate Spicer as our patron.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember you telling me she's got Potenko. Yeah.
She has. She's got Booth, who is an Ibizan hound. And Booth is wonderful. Yeah, so Kate is our patron. And we've got 2 other vacancies for patrons too. So we'll find someone for those at some point. But it's important to us that it's people, our patrons have Spanish dogs. So that's a little harder for us to find. But Kate's very highly supportive of us. She mentions us on Insta and Facebook, etc. But like I say, we're very new. We're just starting out. We've got a lot to do yet. All our links are forged because of working with other rescues. So all our transport is organised and our backup is pretty much the best you can get, you know. So all dogs will have free behaviour help for all of their lives. So it's pretty good.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. I can't wait to see the website. That's very exciting that it's launching today. We will be able to put the link in.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be up and running. We've been waiting for it for the whole 6 weeks now. So it's been quite, well, we were about to launch 2 weeks ago and then we had to stop and then again, but we are launched on Facebook already. So we are on there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. We will put links for that as well. Well, it's been really interesting talking to you today, Janine, as I knew it would be. All things dog and keto and low carb and sugar addiction. What more could you ask for? But we do like to round off the podcast with a top tip. So what have you got for us?
Okay, would that be a keto tip or a doggy tip?
It can be anything you like. I would probably go for a doggy tip.
Okay. Top tip for a doggy tip is always set your dog up for success.
Very good. Nice and easy.
Yep. And means an awful lot.
Yeah.
Whatever you're doing.
Yeah, and I think that just goes along the lines of, doesn't it, of using the sort of the happy track and the reward track rather than the punitive.
Says everything you need to. Yeah. Yeah. Set the dog up for success in everything he does. It's like teaching a child to swim as well. Start them off where they won't drown.
Yeah. Helps. Just throw them in at the deep end and hope they don't sink.
Yeah. Yeah. Set them up for success every time. Set them up to win. Set them up to do it right. You're going to boost their confidence and they're going to get it.
Yeah, and just understand the way they're thinking, the way they see things.
Yeah.
And we've mentioned it a couple of times before, and I will put the link in the show notes, but I think the Culture Clash book really does that well.
Yep.
She uses human examples that really bring it home, I think. And we'll just, I think, we'll get you thinking a bit differently about why your dog does different things. And just seeing actually everything that they do, even, well, and definitely including those things that you find irritating, once you appreciate them as natural dog behaviors that you're trying to change, it becomes a lot easier, I think, to be patient and to start figuring out ways of just rubbing along together, not trying to just stop them doing all their doggy things.
Yep, that's exactly as I see it. I'm looking for a bit of a symbiotic relationship between dog and human, a little bit of understanding that goes both ways, because love isn't actually a cure-all, but understanding is.
Oh, absolutely.
So the more you understand, the more the dog gets you, you're going to end up in a great place. But if you try and if you try too hard to get things right, or you try too hard to get a specific behavior that, you know, that is not coming, it's much better to relax, think about it, think of ways you can make the dog encourage the dog down towards that behavior with it being his choice. You know, it's a bit like having a husband, really. Let them think it's their choice. You know?
I don't know about that. Something I don't have any experience with. I'd rather deal with dogs, frankly.
Well, just lead, show them the way, let them make the choice.
And as you said to me many a time, we do have to live together. And, you know, dogs have to fit into our lives as they are. So it's not... Yes, it's about putting the dogs first, but it's that the dogs have to fit into our lives as well. So you're very much about finding a sensible solution that works for everyone.
Yeah.
It's not just about putting the dog on the pedestal and worshipping them at all costs.
No, it's not. It's about the compromise involved from both, really, to get the best deal.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. Yeah.
Well, brilliant. Well, I look forward to carrying on working with you to fix Rocket or fix me or whichever it is that needs fixing. And I look forward to all the things you've got coming up. It's very important that you're on top of your health, because it sounds like you've got way more things that that you want to do than you're actually physically able to do. So you need to, your health needs to be in tip-top condition to get them all done.
Indeed. I've got to keep my blood pressure down. So that's exactly what I'm doing. And I need to stay healthy, because I've got 10 years work I need to do in about 3.
Absolutely. People talk about it's very important to have your why. Well, yours is very finely honed.
Oh, absolutely.
Good for you.
Very much so.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Janine. It's been a great pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you, Daisy. You made it easy for me. Which is so lovely of you.
Glad to hear it.
Considering I was so scared. So thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you. Thank you for staying with me right to the end. As I mentioned last week, I had 2 doggy quotes to choose from, and I used one last week and I kept one to round off this week's episode. So this week's end quote is from W.R. Perch. Everyone thinks they have the best dog, and none of them are wrong. Until next week, please take very good care, have a very fabulous weekend, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.